you're tuned into Book Choice on Fine Music Radio with me, your host, Paige Nick. And our show is sponsored, as always, by Exclusive Books. Right, I mentioned the next title up front, and I told you that it was one of my very favorite books so far this year. And it's called The Interpreters, South Africa's New Nonfiction. It's a selection of essays that have been edited by Sean Christie and Hedley Twiddle. This is an exceptional, exceptional book. It's just come out a couple of months ago. It's very thick, so one of those deep reads. I have to tell you, I haven't finished it. I've started it, but I'm taking as long as I can to read it. I really want to enjoy every single one. I do think this will be in the top five books that are brought out in South Africa this year. I highly recommend it. So much so, we're talking about bringing you this book on the show. We thought we'd do something slightly different. So first up, Vanessa Levenstein is going to review The Interpreters, South Africa's New Nonfiction. So she's going to tell us a little bit about the book, what's in it, what you can expect, what the whole idea behind it is. After that, she's going to follow it up with an actual interview with one of the editors of the book, Hedley Twiddle. So they're going to chat then in a little bit more depth about how they edited it, how they curated it, what made them think to do a book like this. It's very unique, how they pulled the whole thing together. So we're going to get a review first, and that's happening right now. Vanessa's here telling us about The Interpreters, South Africa's New Nonfiction, a book I cannot rave about enough.
The Interpreters, South Africa's New Nonfiction, edited by Sean Christie and Hedley Twiddle, gives credence to the expression, life is stranger than fiction. The stories are so riveting, in some cases even poetic. It feels like fiction. This nearly 500-page anthology showcases three decades of post-apartheid writing from 33 exceptional journalists. Some names are better known than others, but a famous name doesn't guarantee it will be your favorite chapter. All contributions are good. There is no weakest link. This anthology deals with a lot of pain, struggle, and injustice, which is apt considering the subject material, South Africa. But there's also humor and in some cases hope and perhaps catharsis. But if you're looking for reassurance about our past and present, this collection isn't it. However, if you're looking for brilliant writing, stories that expand your world, work you may even identify with, testimonies that leave you wanting more, this book has it all, and it's deeply meaningful. We descend into the underworld with illegal miners, the Zamazamas. We dodge and get hit by bullets. We enter a fertility clinic, visit an art gallery, and, as to be expected, there's a lot to do with land, from farms to a posh suburb built over graveyards. I have to mention by name one of the stories, which is also the title of this anthology, The Interpreters. Here, we get under the skin of the TRC interpreters. Mind-blowing, actually. And then they've even included chapters from cartoonists. Each chapter I've underlined a quote worth sharing, so almost randomly I had to choose two. Listen to these words from Lynn Sampson's Now You've Gone and Killed Me. That's how it was told by the girl, with the shaking hands, and I can assure you, she is beyond imagining anything. In her life, imagination is superfluous. And this from Bongani Madonda's Amazrali and Fantasia. Remember, this is non-fiction. The visitation was followed by a dream in which, hold your breath, he grew feathers, flew into the sky, and finally came across a swarm of locusts, the size and ferocity of which he'd never seen. I could go on. I could go on. Or, better still, I could stop here and speak to one of the editors of this collection, Hedley Twiddle.
Thank you so much, Vanessa. I think that's an excellent summary of what the book is really about. As I said, I haven't even finished it yet, and I can't recommend it enough to everybody that I'm talking about. This is that book that you're always telling everyone about. It's a book you can gift. It's a book you can keep forever. And I think they're going to be bringing it out a few of them. I think this should be something kind of regular, although you can see the amount of work it's taken to bring out this kind of excellent journalism. So I would imagine they would need a couple of years. It's such excellent writing. They would need a couple of years between bringing out each one. So to round off that brilliant review, we wanted to actually chat to one of the editors to find out a lot more detail about where the project came from, how they got to it, why they did it, and how they did it. As a small independent publisher, how they pulled this off is remarkable. They've embarked on this massive journey to pull together these incredible authors and these incredible essays. So Vanessa Levenstein is back now, and she's chatting to Hedley Twidle about the experience of creating The Interpreters.
Welcome to Book Choice.
Thanks very much, Vanessa. Great to be here.
I want to start off with, what is creative nonfiction?
Yeah, it's a difficult label because it's a sort of non-definition. And I would say it's both totally useless because on the one hand, the writing in this anthology can use all the techniques of novels or short fiction to make characters real, to set scenes, to play with voice and perspective. But on the other hand, you can't get rid of the term nonfiction because I think when we hear or read a story, one of the first decisions we make is it truth-directed or not? Is it trying to deal with the world as it is, or is it trying to deal with an imaginary world? So I suppose creative nonfiction or literary nonfiction is to signal that it's beyond just hard news reporting. It's beyond just fact-based writing. It's bringing in the techniques of literary narration and storytelling that are used by many other kinds of writing.
What was the criteria you used to find these stories? Because they were all previously published, is that correct? And were you looking for that particular narrative style?
Oh, that's a good question. No, there's a huge range in this collection. And, well, the criteria, there were a few of them. One of them was, did the writer take a risk? And there's many different kinds of risk you can take in writing. You can take a physical risk. I think of the piece on Zaman Zamas by Kimon de Grief that you mentioned. You can take a risk of personal disclosure, like Julie Gnadi writing about discovering something as a child, or Anna Hartford writing about IVF, or you can take a risk of saying something, you know, politically difficult to hear. So risk was one. We also, maybe a bit of a more nebulous one, we looked for pieces that only, it seemed that only this writer could have written this piece. I mean, I'm thinking of Prof. Njabula Ndebele. He goes to a game lodge on holiday. He meets an American family there. One of them says, gee, now I know what it feels like to be a colonialist. And he thinks about the game lodge from this perspective. And, you know, to me, only Njabula Ndebele could have written that piece because he's both a storyteller and he's both an academic and a social theorist, and he brings those two together. I also think of William Dicey's extraordinary essay about being a pear farmer in the Boerland. I don't think there's any other pear farmer in the world who could have written about the difficulties of being a farmer and so honestly about land and labor relations and the impress of the past as William Dicey. It's a remarkably frank, fiercely honest piece, but also a gentle piece. It's kind of gently anguished as well, as I say in the intro.
There's an honesty, a vulnerability, and a truth that threads through all of them.
Absolutely. The paradox, though, is that there's a wonderful bit from Anki Kroch's Country of My Skull, the famous book about the TRC. She's reporting as a radio journalist, and her engineer says, hey, when you say the word truth, your voice tightens up and, you know, you must relax. And he says, truth is most your job. And she says, I'm very suspicious of the word truth. And the paradox is that actually it's often by being suspicious of overbearing truths with a capital T, i.e. truths that are too general, that are too easy, that are too quick, that you get the will to truth, the truth directedness that you feel in this kind of writing, which is suspicious of truths with a capital T that are arrived at too easily.
Okay, so I'm so tempted to start unraveling her chapter, The Interpreters, but I can't, because every single time you touch on something, I actually want like another 10 minutes to talk about, but our sound engineer Mazu is looking at me and shaking his head. So we're going to have to plow on. I want to talk about the reason why you did this collection. Was it at all influenced by the fact that a lot of our really good publications are closed?
Yeah, that's one of the big questions. You know, putting together a book like this, it takes you into a history of where pieces like this have appeared. And that ranges from, yeah, Freya Wirkblad, Mail and Guardian, Chimurenga, this amazing Pan-African Gazette founded by Antoni Ajabe. It's a range. Some pieces appeared in the New Yorker or Granta, some of the most prestigious venues in the English-speaking world. Some appeared in little journals called Proofrock or Mampur that only lasted for a few years. Some appeared on Rustam Kozain's essay Dacha about growing up outside Pal. He published it on a blog and then it got collected and recollected. So yeah, it is one of the worries that, you know, there's not, platforms are closing down. I don't know, the Mail and Guardian are, you know, halving their staff. Things are being handed out to AI, but I still think there's still always an appetite for long form writing where someone, a real person, really thinks about something hard.
AI is a whole different discussion, and people can say what they want. AI could not have produced this book.
No.
Not in a million AI years. You used the word risk earlier when you were talking about the risks the writers took. And I also thought it was quite brave decisions you made. I didn't read any preppy, Pollyanna-ish stories. And the last chapter...
I gave the names by Adrian Liftwich.
Yeah. Quite a brave chapter to end off with.
Absolutely. Yeah, he sold out his comrades in the struggle, and he turned state evidence. He was a disgraced figure. And then years later, he reflects on what he did as a young man, and it's this reckoning with something shameful that he did. I think it's also got a lot to say about how all of us have to work through what's shameful in our past and what's difficult and what's awkward. I mean, I lived through the moment of the student process, and a lot of what young students were saying was, we haven't reconciled everything, we haven't sewn everything up. You know, there's a lot of things that are still to be discussed and resolved, or, you know, they will remain unresolved. So for me, the kind of writing that is important is writing that doesn't rush to tie things up. You know, if you're writing a piece, by the end, you can feel an urge to tidy things up and tie it up in a bow. But for me and for my co-editor, the kind of writing that provides real consolation, it's not so much about a resolution. It's maybe about a consolation, about seeing someone else think about something, live with something, live through something. It provides, I would say, nourishment. It provides something for the soul, if I can put it that way. Meaning, rather than that rush to a quick conclusion, which can seem false or forced or rushed.
Exactly. And that doesn't lead to one feeling happy because it's empty.
Indeed.
So this was very, very meaningful and cathartic in ways.
We did try to keep a few funny pieces in there. Originally, we were going to put some of our own pieces in, and I really regret not putting my co-editor's piece, Searching for the Soul of the Yuxke River, in, which is a hilarious piece in which he follows the Yuxke River. But we do have Michael Haynes talking about, you know, cruising the public conveniences of Central Cape Town as a young gay man. Incredible piece. Rian Malan's piece on Solomon Linda's song Mbube, which becomes Wimawe, which becomes In the Jungle. It's a tour de force. It's incredibly amusing, even though it's about painful material in some ways. So, you know, the tonally, even though the subjects can be difficult, I mean, I think of Mohorosi Motshumi's graphic autobiography, Hard Rock. He's dealing with all kinds of things, detention, disability, HIV/AIDS stigma. But he does it in such a madcap, zany way, a wry way, and he's doing it through cartooning. It's very intriguing to see these weighty subjects being taken on by someone with a real eye for the absurd like that. So the graphic nonfiction, which my co-editor insisted on, was also a fascinating discovery for me.
So interesting. And you're reading the book, and then you come across this. Okay, one last thing. You mentioned a work that you really said didn't get into this anthology. So it means one thing. When can we look forward to The Interpreters Volume 2?
We've always looked at this as a two-volume project. We did this the independent publisher way. We are basically the publishers. So as long as we break even, we want to do a second volume. And whereas this volume pulled more towards journalism, the second volume will probably pull more towards the essay and memoir. And we want to go further back in time. We want to go across the whole 20th century. And we want to get a much wider range and miscellany of South Africans writing, not just about South Africa, of writing about all sorts of things. This first anthology is really, it is about the political transition in many ways. But, you know, there's people writing about all sorts of things as well. So we hope for a wider, maybe more amusing, more essay-like sequel. So listeners, please go out and buy it so we can do that.
Buy it because it's brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Vanessa.
Thank you so much, Vanessa Levenstein, for that incredible segment. First, you did a review of the book. You read it so deeply, as you always do, and with so much empathy and so much understanding. You and I really do often enjoy a lot of similar stuff. So I was over the moon that you enjoyed it as much as I did, although I'm not surprised. And then you joined us after that with Hedley Twiddle to dig a little bit deeper into the process of publishing this book. I love this whole conversation. I'm so glad we've covered this the way we have. Listener, this is a book. I urge you, go out to your local exclusive books and pick up a copy as fast as you can.